Welcome to Story Talking, episode 18. This week, my guest is Ramiz Shaikh, who is a 24-year-old writer from Mumbai, and he writes a lot about Indian culture and society and socio-political issues. So we talk a lot about those things, how he got started, how long he's been doing it, what kind of stuff he writes about, the couple of the articles that we will be talking about. You can just Google his name and they will pop up. But this was a really insightful conversation. We talked about a lot of different things about the Indian culture and how as guys in the society, as men in the society, we kind of are really privileged just by being men in general, and how that gives us the responsibility to be better and to be more supportive of women's rights and causes. So, really fun conversation. I hope you guys enjoy it. Here is episode 18 of Story Talking with Ramiz Shaikh.
So I was born and raised in Bandra and Bombay itself. And so I've pretty much lived here all my life. And yeah. I didn't always start writing. It didn't always begin that way. It's not like, you know, right. I was a kid and I was like, oh, I need to write. I read a lot as a kid.
Yeah.
But I come from a very humble background. So like we didn't really have a lot. I didn't have a lot of money growing up. So I've seen like hard days.
Yeah.
So back then, the one mindset I had was I want to make some money.
Right.
Because obviously when you don't have a lot of money growing up, that's the aim. The aim is to, you know, oh, I'm going to, you know, make some money. So I was a smart kid growing up.
Yeah.
Good grades and everything. But so when I passed out my test, I passed out with good grades. So nobody forced me into it, but yeah. it was kind of expected of me to do something more with my life and not take up arts. Although,
yeah.
I was more inclined towards it, personally speaking, because I was always, you know, creative and into reading and all of that. But I was like, oh, shit, if I do that, that's not a lot of money there. That's what's told to you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, oh, let's do science. It's not like nobody forced me, but it's just that there was this sense of expectation, so to speak.
Sure, yeah.
Well, I took up science and I didn't really do well. I failed my 12th grade.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called like 11. In mathematics. So that was like a bummer for me because it was the worst and the best thing that happened to me.
Yeah.
The worst because obviously I failed. And you know, it sucks to have that 1 year where all your friends and peers are like, you know, already they're doing more of their lives because they moved on. And then you're just there, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You can't really do anything apart from wait for the next exams and, you know, repeat it and hope you pass. So that 1 year was like quite a dark spell in my life.
Yeah.
Except it also allowed me to reevaluate everything I was doing. I was like, it's not like if I pass the exam, I'm going to score like a 90 percentile and end up in an engineering college. And if I pass, I'm going to be mixing chemicals in the lab. And that's not what I see myself doing.
Right.
You know? So I was like, okay, so what am I good at? I'm good at writing. I was always, you know, the college magazine editor and, you know, all of those things which were creatively, I was drawn towards that.
Yeah.
And it came naturally to me. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to give this a shot. That's what I'm going to do.
Hmm.
So when I finally cleared those exams, I went into, I took up journalism.
Yeah.
That is mass media. And then I specialized in journalism in my final year. But because I'd already lost out on some time, right, because I failed.
Yeah.
I thought the best way to do it was, and thankfully the college I went to allowed me to work.
Mm-hmm.
My class would end by like 11, 12-ish.
Okay.
So I had a whole day for me to do whatever I wanted.
Okay.
So I started working. So by the time I left college, I already had 2.5 years worth of
really
writing experience.
And you were doing like freelance work or what kind of work?
I mean, I was technically interning, but
right.
But like, thankfully, at least Homegrown gave me the opportunity. One of the places I freelance with right now is Homegrown.
Yeah.
But I worked with them for a year back then.
Okay.
So they just started out. They were like about 8 months old, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Seven, like half a year. Yeah, within under a year.
Yeah.
And they needed writers, so I applied and I got through. And it was a very small office then, right? It was just, you know, the people who run the place and me, and just so I got a lot of writing exposure there.
Yeah.
I had a lot of responsibilities which I wouldn't otherwise have gotten anywhere else. Like, it's not like you go out and they're like, oh, here's the main feature and you get to write it. Because that's not what I would have gotten at 6A at the Times of India.
Yeah.
I'd just be, you know, stealing papers and running around and copy editing or whatever.
Yeah.
So, so that was nice. And then by the time I left, and I worked at other places also, a couple other places, which, you know, odd jobs here and there.
Yeah.
Writing jobs, but not the best, but it's fine. What worked for me back then was I made all my mistakes in those 2.5 years.
Right.
Right. So, by the time I left, I already knew what was expected in the field and what I had to do. So then that helped me. And then eventually, just thankfully, it took off from there. So I've been working since. It's been, what, 3 years now? Yeah, 3-4 years.
So you finished college about 3-4 years ago? Is that?
Yeah, I finished college 3 years ago. Yeah, it'll be 3 years now, yeah.
Okay.
3 years ago. So then almost 3 years now, like end of this like semester.
And you've been writing pretty much for like, I mean, professionally writing for like five years now.
5 years. Yeah. From 4 or 5 years. Yeah, easily. I'll have to go back. But yeah, 2013, I think I started.
Right. And so let's go back a little bit again, right?
Okay.
What was the, you say you grew up in Bombay, you know, your entire life so far.
Yeah.
The, given, you know, whatever environment you were seeing around you, like, when was the first time you were like, I think I want to process the life I see around me, like, and I want to put it into words? Do you remember like that actually being a moment where you were like that, or you suddenly just found yourself writing thoughts down?
Yeah. So that was where I came from initially. So while I did write, I never considered it as a profession, so to speak.
Right.
It was more like, oh, I'll do it on the side. Oh, I'll write for myself. Oh, I have my little diary. When I was younger, you know, everybody has their own diaries and all of that.
Sure. Yeah.
So I had all of those, and I used to write short stories and stuff like that. You know, essays for these competitions. So all of those things, but I never really considered it as a full-blown profession till I failed.
Yeah.
So the day I failed was when I was like, listen, something's wrong and I'm not doing what I should be doing, right? So, yeah, like I said, it was the worst thing that happened to me, but also the best thing.
Yeah.
It really changed my life into another direction, and that was really helpful.
And how did your family respond to you going in this direction?
When I started out, I don't think a lot of them were pleased, so to speak, because they all saw it as a step down from what I was supposedly destined for.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, you're a smart kid, you always got good grades, why are you doing arts? Really, you know? And I'm like, it's really not arts, it's mass media, it's journalism, I'm specializing in journalism, you know? Yeah. It's not like I'm doing some, I mean, I don't even get why people who do their BAs get a lot of shit, right? They're like, oh, you're just doing a BA. Well, there's a lot. I mean, I don't know, there was a famous saying or something where it says that, oh, I think it was Robin Williams in that movie, Deadwood Society.
Oh, Deadwood Society.
Where he's like, doctors, engineers, these are noble professions and worth living for, but art is, you know, what we live for and all that. So yeah, so that, from that perspective, it really makes sense, right?
He also said that we do it to impress women.
Really?
He did say that in the movie. It was later in the quote.
Okay.
Well, he said poetry and writing is the language with which you impress and woo women. But he said it I mean, he was talking to teenage boys.
Yeah.
I guess it was the only way for him to get them to write poetry.
Yeah. I think I conveniently blocked that word out.
Right.
So that was where I came from initially. It was, and I got a lot of flack from my family where they were all like, oh, is this what you want to do? And I'm like, yeah, I guess it's working out. So even when I was interning, the money wasn't that great because you're still in college and, you know, you're working on whatever and everything. But after I passed out and everything, thankfully it's been more than okay.
Yeah.
And I'm finding it's all right. And I'm trying to get into script writing and all that also now. So I think there's money there. So let's see eventually. But I think at the end of the day, when you do write, right, you don't like, there are some jobs I do for the money. I think any and every person who's been writing will admit to doing that. You can't just survive off, you know, writing
for yourself. Yeah.
I mean, I have to create content for brands and websites and whatnot, which is not, you know, what ideally you would want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because you obviously want to go out there and write these editorials and these beautiful, you know, literary pieces. And that's not always what you're going to do.
Yeah.
But those are the ones I do for money. Mm-hmm. The ones that once that's taken care of.
Yeah.
Then the other side comes in where you get to write for yourself. So it's like this balance you have to maintain.
Right.
Like I said, all this I learned the hard way in the 2.5 years in college when I was working. Because I was like, yeah, you know, this is also what you got to do. You can't just survive off, you know, living the dream, so to speak, whatever I want to write. So,
so when you were going through that initial, you know, first 6 months or first year of writing, did you give yourself any some sort of self-criticism, kind of questioned your place there? Like, did you kind of have like this imposter syndrome of, am I good enough? Or does it really matter what I have to say? How am I different? How is my voice different?
I still have that.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
That is the right answer.
I'm just... No, I'm pretty. There are days where I just wake up and I'm like, "What am I doing? Is this what I'm cut out to do?" I mean, and the thing is that, okay, I'll tell you what happened last year.
Yeah.
Around this time, I think it was the 4th of January last year, right? Throughout my time when I've been writing, right, people have come up to me and they've said, "Oh, you write so well. Oh, you're such a good writer, whatever."
Mm-hmm.
But most of them were my friends.
Right.
Right. So I wasn't sure if they're just being nice because they're my friends.
Sure. Yeah.
Or is it actually because people like my writing?
Yeah.
Till about last year, around this time, when I wrote something about this Bangalore molestation case on Facebook. Yeah. And that just went viral and it went crazy viral. It had like 8,000 likes and whatnot, mm-hmm. shares, all of that. Yeah. And even then, in that moment, when I am being validated by random strange. I mean, they have nothing, they have no connection, no personal attachment to me. They're still sharing it and they're liking it.
Right.
I still had this sense of like, is it just the message or is it my writing? Is it because people connect with it because it's... And then again, when I reread it, I'm like, I'm not saying anything different. I'm just saying the same thing people have been saying all along.
Yeah.
So that sense of self-doubt or... Like I said, imposter. I don't know. It's always been there. And I feel like it's a part of every artist or anybody in the creative field.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what you do, nothing will ever be perfect.
Yeah.
There'll always be scope for me. And I think that's a good way to go about it, I feel, because that then there's always room for improvement.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like if you ever look at something and you say, oh, that's the best thing I can write, then that's it. There's nothing else to work for, right?
Yeah.
If you've peaked already, then where do you go from there?
Yeah.
So that's one aspect. The other aspect, it keeps you grounded, keeps you humble. And I have, like I said, I have earned nothing in my life so far. Like I have done nothing. I'm just starting out. I'm just a writer. I write for magazines. I've written for newspapers and I've written for websites.
Yeah.
And I've had a couple of my pieces go viral here and there.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't amount to shit. You know, I still have to write. I would love to write a book eventually.
Yeah.
And that needs to do well.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to write scripts and stories for people. And, you know, because there is, I have a lot of things to say.
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to come out. And I would love for it to come out. So till I don't achieve all of that.
Yeah.
I would still feel like, I would still, you know, have this sense of self-doubt. And mm-hmm. that always linger at some level. And I feel like even if that happens, I'll still have it. Because then I'll be like, oh, but I've done this. But then I need to do that too. So, that I think that always remains. So, back in the day, it was obviously much stronger.
Yeah.
Because you're just starting out and you mess up so often.
Sure.
And just, but I feel like I said, you learn on the job. And the more you write and the more you edit and the more you write and the more you... That's just a constant process. Write, edit, write, edit, write, edit. And the biggest... criticism I have of myself is that I feel like I don't proofread and edit enough.
Right.
if I write something, so say I have a deadline on a Monday, or Sunday, right? I will write it on Saturday and submit it without looking at it again.
Yeah.
When in truth, I shouldn't be doing that. I should be sleeping on it. I should go to sleep, wake up in the morning with a fresh mind and be like, listen, okay, and reread it. And then obviously there are things that you want to change. Then these articles get published and then I'm reading them and then I'm like, oh, I could have written that. So yeah, that's one.
Could have framed that better. But you know, I've pretty much been a fiction guy myself, but the only way I'm able to press publish is to let go of it immediately. Like I'm not, it's part of my style in a way, and I'm able to get away with it because of, you know, cause I have my own platform, so I don't really have someone to answer to, but it's become part of that feeling. Cause if I took too long to edit and go back and be like, did I say this correctly? Or is there a better way to say this? Yeah. I'll never be able to press publish.
Yeah.
You know, it's just because, and that below that surface is that's just a lot of self-doubt. That's just a lot of no one gives a fuck about what I'm saying. You know, why should this matter? Why should any of this matter? Why do I have words? Why do words matter to me? Like, there's just so many questions. Yeah.
The other side to that is when you see, now there's this latest trend on Instagram and Facebook and all these places where those, which is started by Terribly Tiny Tales, which is a good platform. I quite like Terribly Tiny Tales.
Mm-hmm.
But then from that, there have been these various spin-offs and different versions. Yeah. And they're just these god-awful stories and poetry, which is not even poetry. It's just like the way I look at it. And I don't mean to demean anybody. And I'm always all for people trying to be creative and, you know, publish their work and whatever. But just because you put a sentence together doesn't mean you can write. Anybody who can speak English can put a sentence together.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an art and there's so much more to writing than just that. So it personally feels slightly like, you know, I'm like, why though? Like, why are you doing that? Like, I can't just, you know, fix pipes and be like, I'm a plumber. That guy, I can't just, you know, randomly one day wake up and be like, oh, I study maths in school, so now I'm like an accountant. I mean, you can't really, you know, just take up a role and be like, oh, I'm this now. And like I said, I'm all for people trying to do that, but then don't half-ass it.
Like, you know, put in effort.
A little more effort. There are so many of them out there. So, like, on one side, there is self-doubt where, you know, I could write the best piece I could ever write. And I would still have this sense of, oh, shit, is it good enough? Should I publish it? Oh, shit, what would people say? Oh, is it politically correct? Oh, is it this? Is it that? All of these things. And then there are these random people with so much confidence in them who just put these pieces out. And I'm like, how do you have so much confidence to confidently go out there and publish this? For everybody to see without, I don't know. So I'm half in awe because I'm like, I wish I had that kind of confidence.
Yeah.
Just not give a shit about what people say.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, writers like that, bad writers don't have self-doubt, really. I think they function very well without it because no one's told them that they're really bad. But I guess as long as, I mean, that's why that's the weird curse of wanting or feeling that you're a creative person. You're constantly trying to be better and also judge yourself to a point where you judge yourself so much that no one else could really judge you more.
Got it.
And that's why you're kind of able to let these words out and, you know.
Yep.
But it's, I think it's definitely interesting given that there are, like, especially in India over the last, ever since Instagram or for the last like 10 years or so. I mean, you said you're 24, right?
24, yeah.
And so when you, by the time, Facebook came out 2003. I know.
Okay.
In India, it came out around 2006, 2007.
But
you were already, you know, you were already like a teenager by the time it came out.
Yeah.
Something like that. So you grew up with that environment where there is no self-editing. There's a lot of oversharing. But it also gave way for voices to get the spotlight when they couldn't get the spotlight before. So there's, that's like the, I was listening to another podcast today that basically said that, you know how when you're stuck in traffic and you want to yell because people are making a lot of stupid mistakes.
Yeah.
You want to yell at them, but your windows are closed, so you can yell at the traffic without anyone being, you know, hearing you.
Yeah.
He said that the internet is basically you stuck in traffic yelling at the traffic, but people can hear you.
I completely agree. You know? Yeah.
So, sure, people are going to be able to be loud and drown out voices of those who actually are working hard at, you know, being heard. Yep. But the ones who are loudest are still going to, you know, get like peaks of some viralism that, okay, this guy's going to get heard. And India is a big example of volume really affecting celebrity and popularity.
Yeah.
And so you've been writing about, like, you write a lot about the culture as well, just the stuff that is happening around you, right?
So I write about socio-political issues.
Yeah.
And for the longest time when I was growing up, I was in my own dream world, right? So I would always prefer reading fiction. I wouldn't read philosophy. I wouldn't read nonfiction.
Yeah.
I would be like, oh, that's so boring. Who's going to read all of that? So, like, you know, fiction is so great. Which is, fiction is beautiful. Like, and anybody who's read a fictional book would admit to that.
Mm-hmm.
But as I grew older, and as I became more aware about the issues and the more I learn and the more I unlearn anything else, I feel like as a writer, I've grown more that way. Okay. Now I read a lot of nonfiction and I write a lot about social political issues. So I write about feminism and women's rights.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that really affects me at a very personal level.
Yeah.
Because I've seen women all around me being affected by it. That push my
I read your male feminist article.
I remember writing about toxic masculinity now. It should be out soon. And I want to write about mainstream politics also.
Right.
But I feel like I need to learn more about it because I don't want to give a half-assed opinion and be like, oh yeah, this is what I think. I know what I think. But I feel like there's obviously, and especially in India, it's not black or white. It's never black right, when it comes to politics. There are so many layers and there's so much, you know, that you need to, like, even if you just go in there, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So I would love to write about that too. But yeah, culture is something that, because I feel like in India and all around the world, actually, you cannot, like culture and religion is so closely linked.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you cannot really, so I feel like there is a need to separate the two, so to speak, which is very difficult to do, but I try and do that when I write.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I feel like religion really,
so how are you able to, I mean, because you are writing on, I mean, I wish they weren't, but they are slightly divisive topics, especially in this country.
How
are you giving yourself the thick skin to listen to both sides? Because there are very few people are in the center when they read these things. You know, many people who comment, they're either going to be extremely left and agree with everything.
Yeah.
And then they're going to troll the people who disagree.
Yeah. I get called names all the time. I get called.
Well, you've seen that, right? There's even the people who agree with you kind of are trolls in their own way because they don't want to listen to the people on the other side at all.
So that's one thing which I feel the only criticism I have of people on the internet is that there is no dialogue. Yeah. There is no room for dialogue.
It's just
shouting and people just yell at each other, right? They just go like, oh, this is my point and that is your point. Now you may fuck off.
Yeah.
So I'm like, that's not going to solve anything. And I get the anger. I get because I feel it personally. So I get the anger. I get why people, because if they're tired of being silent, they're tired of their voices not being heard, they're tired of, you know, whatever. But I'm like, that's my personal opinion, at least, is that that's not going to help. I'll give you an example, right?
Mm-hmm.
Say there is a man who's born in a very religious Christian or Muslim family,
mm-hmm.
or even a Hindu family, like a deeply religious person, right?
Yeah.
He's born in a family, he's been raised to believe that your religion is everything and this is what you're gonna, whatever. And that's the environment he grew up in, right? He grows up and he's like about 26, 30, whatever. He gets married. He has a baby, right? He has a kid. Now he's like 50 years old. His kid is like 20, right? And his kid comes to him and he's like, oh, by the way, I'm gay. How do you expect this person who's lived 50 years of his life with that one mentality that this is wrong?
Right.
You expect him to be like, yeah, okay, cool. I guess you're gay now. Because he doesn't know any better. He doesn't understand any better. There is no knowledge that has been imparted, and there is nothing that he has learned. It's 50 years of thinking. Basically, you're telling him 50 years of what you believed in is a lie. And how many people at the age of 50 are going to let that go and be like, oh, yeah, you know what? I lived the life of 50 years. You're right.
Right.
So you can't expect it to change overnight. And I feel like people just expect, oh, I'm going to give you a huge rant as to why you're homophobic. He is homophobic, yes. There's nobody. But then you have to understand and try and penetrate the mentality in a manner that he understands best or she understands. Right. And I feel like that's the difficult bit that people don't want to do. When you sit down with family, right, you're at the dinner table and your father says something stupid that's sexist or just, you know, racist or anything. How many of the Indians out there who rant on the internet will be like, oh, dad, you know what? You're wrong.
Right.
Like, small percentage. So it's very easy to sit behind a screen and furiously type.
Yeah.
It's pretty hypocritical of me because that's what I do for a living.
Right.
But it's also... but it's also equally, you know, like you need to do that in real life. And I feel like the more I grow and the more I write, the more it's out there. Like when I do write about topics like I wrote about being sexually abused by a cousin of mine. Right. I wrote about feminism, and I wrote about atheism, and I wrote about all these things, which are conversations I cannot have at the dinner table.
Right.
Conversation I cannot bring up at a family gathering, because these are people who are deeply religious, who have a set way in which they live.
Yeah.
So I feel like talking about it in an echo chamber is easier, because if there is a group of people,
right,
if you're the audience and everybody is on your side and you agree with them, then why are you there?
Yeah.
You all, whatever I'm saying, you're agreeing with, right?
Yeah,
you have to say I'm agreeing with. So then, why are we just here to, you know, pat each other's backs?
Yeah.
So when you ask me how do I deal with that, that's where I come from. Like if I don't talk about it, and sort of, you know, discuss and have this discourse with people who don't agree with me.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole point. The whole point is to ensure that people who do not get it,
right.
And then
right.
listen to them and listen to this other story, and then have a discourse because. Like I said, I'm all for, you know, gay rights and everything. People, but my point is, how many kids in a remote village in Bihar even know what gay is?
Right.
So if they don't know what gay is, and if that's something that has been, that's what they grow up with.
Yeah.
Then they're like 30 years old, and then you're like, oh, you're a homo. I don't even think they know what it is.
Right. Yeah.
Until they don't know, until you don't talk about it, how are you going to even, you know? That bit comes later. First, you have to educate them. So, yeah, I mean, we're privileged enough because we live in the urban spaces and, you know, we are exposed to the world and its ways and everything.
Yeah.
And there are so people who just, you know, their entire life is just that one village or that one little rural area or that one small town. And that is all they know. And that their entire life is, oh, we'll go work a government job and we'll do this and we'll do that. And that is it. So... it's you with all your privileges of education and living in an urban space and a much freer society and a much more open-minded society. You have a lot of privileges which they don't. So I feel like it's a bit sad that we resort to humiliating them or ridiculing them even for their views, as opposed to calmly having a discussion and educating them on it.
There's that challenge, right? Because, you know, you talked about the idea of how you had to unlearn as you were learning because of all these things that we think are okay. And then we realize, oh, wait, we can talk about certain people like that. We can use these terms. Or we can say that, you know, don't act like a girl. Or that's so, you know, that thing you're wearing is so gay, right?
Yeah.
So How, I mean, first of all,
yeah,
you figured out, and many people are using the internet to figure out that, you know, yeah, education is really the only way to solve problems. And education is not something you can learn overnight. You can't just learn what homophobia is overnight.
Yeah.
And what was that? I mean, did it feel like you were, when you were going through this process of unlearning, how were you, how were you going about it? I mean, were you like talking to people? Were you reading? Like, what was that process like for you?
So I'll tell you, right? Like, I feel like unlearning is much more difficult than learning.
Yeah.
Because you're so set in your ways that you have to change the way you think.
Yeah.
And a lot of people can't really part with that. Like, the way you think, it's very difficult to let go of that, because that's what you've learned all your life. So, like, letting go of that is very difficult. I was in an all-boys school growing up. Right, and the times I grew up in, so to speak, were like full of these Bollywood movies are full of sexism, right?
Yeah.
Every second, whatever it is.
All of them.
Like,
almost made by men, made for men.
Yep. And the girl's only job is to look nice on the screen and just. So I come from that era, so to speak. And so growing up, it was like, I also have done things like that, you know. Or if you're in an all-boys school, at some level you might say, oh, that's wrong. But then everybody's doing it. So you're like, okay, everybody's doing it. Then that means it must be right.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you have that, you know, that inner voice that's telling you that, oh, this is wrong, you're still going to be like, oh, no, it's okay. It's fine. It's just everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
So I feel like the change came about when I started interacting with more people.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like when I got out of my comfort zone. Because, like, okay, here's the thing. If you hang out with somebody, right, and they're pretty normal, and you're having a great time with their company and everything, and then eventually that person tells you he's gay, why does that change your perception of him? Like, what does his sexuality have to do with two people hanging out as friends and, you know, whatever? I could enjoy a video game with him as much as I could enjoy a video game with the straight guy.
Right.
Just because he's gay, what gives me the right to be like, oh, but you're gay? So, like, that somehow changes. So that doesn't change shit. Similarly, if there's somebody who's a lesbian or somebody who's a bisexual or a transgender person, their personality or their sexuality or any of that doesn't really play a role. But it shouldn't be the defining factor of the person they are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that their sexuality should be the first thing that should really...
Sure.
So that came the top because I also grew up in an all-boys school, and, you know, we also had these gay incidents and stuff like that. Like, I remember, and yes, thing, I'm guilty of it too. It's not like I'm not.
Sure.
But that's the thing. I feel like if you grew up in India, we all are at some
point.
It's only after the age of, like, you know, when you reach 18, 20.
You know, when the water's like, dirty, everyone is dirty.
We're all pigs in the style.
Yeah.
So then like I said, the more I interact with people, especially like when it comes to women's rights, right? I used to always shy away from the term feminism for the long time. I'm like, oh, I don't want to be called a feminist because, like, what the hell is up with that? Again, because I didn't know any better. Because I grew up in an all-boys school. I grew up in a very patriarchal household.
Yeah.
I grew up in a very patriarchal society. I still live in a patriarchal society. But then the more you interact with women, and the more you realize and empathize with their problems, it's like, you're like, okay, you know what? There's an actual problem here. There are people, there are women who are wronged in so many ways that it's impossible to not come out. And, you know what, and it's more than anything else, like I've written this before, women don't need men to fight their battles. I don't think a woman demands that. Oh, you know, you don't need to be the knight in shining armor. You just need to step out and let them do their thing. And I feel like if you just stop putting unnecessary hurdles in your way, they do just fine. It's just that the system in place is so fucked up that we are just doing that as a society. So I feel like that's, so, like I said, I had to unlearn a lot of things, you know?
Right.
Like, I had to stop saying certain things. I was trying to be like, oh, what's wrong with saying that? Or whatever, what's wrong with saying you're so gay or something?
Yeah.
But then you realize that is wrong because that is homophobic. That is a
And you're feeding the monster to, you know.
Yeah, you are, continue. Definitely. And I have gay friends. I have people who are, you know, identify as queer and whatnot.
Yeah.
I have attended gay rallies, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with it, you know? So I feel like it's also a fear because this is something that we've never been exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Because we lived in such a, like, a society is so, you know, like, we're all like, oh, this is how it's going to be. Oh, you're going to hit 25. Yeah. You're going to have arranged marriage and get married and have babies and whatever. Anything apart from that is just, oh, what the right. hell? This is.
Yeah.
The second bit to that is, when it comes to transgender people,
mm-hmm.
it baffles me because we have a whole hijra community here.
Yeah.
Which have been in place for like centuries now.
Right.
So when we have a huge trans, how is it that you still get weirded out by the idea of somebody mm-hmm. identifying? Because I'm like, that's literally been the case for like hundreds of years now.
Yeah.
So it's just closed-mindedness. That's all it is. Yeah. And like I said, there's it's so complicated. Like it's not like I said, it's not a case of black and white.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they're just thinking that because they want to think like that.
Yeah.
There's so much conditioning and indoctrination yeah. that has gone in. And years and decades worth of that.
Yeah.
You can't just expect them to read your rant and be like, okay, cool. Yeah, okay. Right. I guess I've changed now. That's not going to happen.
So, continue. Sorry.
Yeah. So, no. So, that's all it is. I feel like the challenge is to, I feel personally, is it's easy to be on the internet and write about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the difficult bit is to talk about it with your family and friends.
Right.
Because therein lies a chance that you might ruin relationships, and nobody wants to do that.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing that I always encourage people to do. And I feel like with my writing is what I also do, because I have most of my family on Facebook and all of these things. So when I write about these things, which are considered to be a taboo, so to speak, in the family, yeah. right? We don't talk about sex and women's rights and all of that.
Yeah.
I do it brazenly, and then people, like, I've had family members secretly come up to me and be like, oh, that was really nice and everything. So that feels nice in a way, because I feel like, you know, I'm actually helping people come out and, you know,
yeah,
challenge patriarchal norms.
Yeah.
Because they'd be like, oh, he's doing it, so I can do it.
Right.
And then that allows other people to do it. So then that way, I mean, if we just encourage each other,
mm-hmm.
I feel like that will go a long way in changing the ways.
You know, another challenge that I've seen, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it too, is that especially not just in our culture, but, you know, we're talking about our culture because we're both from it.
Yeah.
The whoever is holding or trying to express themselves, whoever is the person who is kind of not really, I like to call them cultural whistleblowers, people who are calling out, you know, something that's wrong, and it's about time.
Yeah.
They're also the first ones to be victimized for speaking out. The people who talk about these things, they're the, because people, you know, it's, and that ends up sometimes discouraging more people to speak out.
Yeah.
Because if you're trying to speak out about something, and whatever method you're using, I mean, the internet in a way can be safer than doing it at a rally, because you can see protesters at a rally, and they can, you know, especially if you're speaking against religion.
Yeah, no, I feel like the internet is the best place to begin.
Right.
I feel like if you can at least go out there and I see nobody has the time to sit and have a comment war. Like, we all have jobs to do and lives to live, right?
Yeah.
I'd rather hang out with my friends and have a good time than sit and talk to some absolute troll who has nothing better to do in life than to just say things just to create an argument or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to pick your fights.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to really, there's no point arguing with somebody who's just arguing for the sake of arguing.
Yeah.
Like, if there's somebody who's willing to have a discourse and have a conversation with you about something.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much the way to go about it. Like, I mean, right now, I think I read that Subramanyam Swami person, who's an MP or something, I don't know. And he's like, oh, if gay people want to have sex, they can do it in closed rooms. They shouldn't do it. They shouldn't have, like, gay parties and they shouldn't be out in the open. That should be criminalized. I said, why should it be criminalized? Like, why? If somebody loves somebody, why should they not be allowed to express it to the best of their ability? Like, why should they hide behind a closed door? Because your homophobic ass can't see two men kissing. That's your first problem. Look away. You have eyes. You can look there. You can look there. Don't look at them.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, this man is like, what, 65, 70? I don't know. Maybe in the 60s, 50s.
Yeah.
How do you have a rational conversation with somebody who's just so set in their ways.
Yeah.
And how do you, how
politics
do you, how,
is even worse yeah, because so many times they're kind of only saying what they know their constituents believe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah,
they have to be their voice so they get re-election, you know, they go through election safely.
No, what I mean is that this guy is a proper, is an actual representation of most of the uncles we know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all, that's what they think. And there'll be like a handful of them in today's world who, like, especially in India, who actually believe that, oh, it's okay to have leaders and all that. But most of them are just homophobic and whatnot. And I feel like if their own kids or their own relatives talk about it, it's easier than a stranger coming up to you and telling you you're stupid.
Sure. Yeah.
Also, I don't believe in name calling.
Yeah.
That's one thing I actively avoid.
Yeah.
Is actually when I'm having a discourse, and that person could, like, I've been called a cuck. I've been called like a mangina. I don't even want to call that.
Yeah.
Just random ass names you people come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's important.
And they're creative too sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes. Yeah.
They spend a lot of time and effort into deciding what to call you.
That's commendable, but really you're wasting your energy. But no, it's, I feel like if you, okay. So like if there is a guy who's, again, born in a very patriarchal household, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's seen his mother be a housewife. He's seen his father be the sole breadwinner of the family.
Yeah.
And, you know, the minute the father comes in, the mother comes in running with a chai. And that's the environment he's grown up in.
Right.
That's all he's learned, right? He's learned that women have a certain duty and men have certain... and these are gender roles that you're supposed to perform, right? Now, this guy goes to college, right? And he sees this new world where he's like, oh, women are actually independent, doing their own thing.
Yeah.
So he is obviously conflicted now.
Mm-hmm.
Like this person is like, oh, but at home, this is what I was taught. But actually, so he's trying to learn something and then he fucks up somewhere, right? He says something stupid or he says something sexist or he's like, oh, women deserve to be in the kitchen, whatever. Okay, that's extreme, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's something that isn't. And then you just go after him and you call him names like, oh, you're such a cunt, you're such this and you're such a that.
Yeah.
I don't think that helps.
Yeah, it doesn't really.
Yeah, because then he'll start questioning, like, what the fuck? Why are you, you know?
Yeah, and negative reinforcement rarely works in psychological experiments like
that. Exactly. So
you can't punish someone for doing that.
Yeah, so I feel like you just sit down and talk to him and tell him why it's wrong.
Yeah.
And explain yourself in a much more eloquent manner and, you know, with experience or something like that.
Yeah.
As a friend, I think that helps more than just resorting to name calling and calling people a cunt or whatever, just because they have different views. People are always going to have different views from you.
Yeah.
And they're going to be extreme sometimes. You just have to live with that. You just have to find the perfect way to approach them and talk to them as opposed to, and if they're not ready to listen, then they're lost. You can't do much. You can't do anything other than that.
Yeah.
Then have a conversation. And if they're not willing to have a rational conversation with you, then they can't be decent with.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. So yeah, I feel like that's one criticism I have of people today. Like if my generation is I feel like we're very impatient and we want change overnight. And I'm like, that's not gonna happen. That's a very utopian concept. That's never gonna happen. We can't change.
We also move on to the next thing quite quickly because there's no change happening here.
No. Yeah, and we're too big a country we're too diverse a country to like in the States, you go to California or you go to Ohio or you go anywhere, it's still America.
Yeah.
Right. Here, it's like you go to Kashmir, it's different. You go to Rajasthan, it's different. You go to Tamil Nadu, it's different. You go to Karnataka, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Bengal, it's completely different.
Yeah.
So every area has its own set of problems. So we can't even like collectively outrage over one. Like there is no unity, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, oh, India. So, no, we're not. We're all, there is so much, like, people judge people based on where they come from. Like, oh, there's a Hindu there. There's, like, a Marwadi there. Oh, look, that guy's a Muslim. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, there is so much diversification that there is no way we can stick to and we can unite over one subject. Because it's already, we all come from so many different places and experiences that there is nothing really, that the common ground is that there is almost nothing to really... So when we outrage about something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like then they'll be like, oh, but in my culture we do it like this. Oh, but in my culture we do it like this. Oh, but then, you know what I mean? So like,
that
also comes into play.
Yeah.
So then there's the whole rural urban angle, right?
Yeah.
Like we're talking about freeing the nipple and all of that,
mm-hmm.
which I get. If you're an independent working woman and you've achieved everything and all of that, mm-hmm. you're privileged to have that, then I think you can talk about free the nipple and breastfeeding in public and all of that.
Yeah.
But then you cannot go to a random village in Mewar or wherever
mm-hmm.
and talk about freeing the nipple when they don't have basic rights. They don't have the right to education. They're not even educated beyond the third grade.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to get what freeing the nipple means.
Yeah.
Like, you have to start. Like I said, I was writing a piece about, like, feminism in India and how it's different from the West.
Yeah.
You cannot, they have had the right to all of that for, like, years now.
Yeah, yeah.
Their battle is, like, a few decades ahead.
Right.
Because the society is different, the culture is different, everything is different. You cannot take those things and apply it in a country where women are killed at birth.
Right.
If you're a girl child, you need to
get the basics right first.
Yeah.
And then we can go for the slightly privileged issues.
Yeah. I feel like we need to. And like, there are millions and millions of women who cannot make choices, who cannot make decisions, who don't have the choices and cannot make decisions for themselves.
Yeah.
I feel like that needs to really come out.
Yeah.
And people need to talk about that more. And I'm not saying one aspect of feminism has more weightage over the other.
Yeah.
Right. But I just feel like we need to prioritize sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when there are women who have nothing
mm-hmm.
and they literally go from one patriarchal head to another.
Yeah.
It's like your father, your brother, or your husband.
Mm-hmm.
You're just passed on. You're considered to be property of a man.
Yeah.
That still exists in today's world, and you're just a baby making machine, then mm-hmm. that needs to be addressed first.
Yeah.
Again, that's just my two cents. I could be wrong, and I'm always, you know, willing for anybody to come out and talk about that or anything. I'm not belittling any other movements or any of that sort.
When you are, you know, sitting down and you're seeing all of this happen and you're trying to put the right context and perspective and research into putting a piece together, right? And hoping that no matter how angry it makes you, how frustrated it makes you, you're trying to put what you consider to be the right truth when you're writing it down.
Yeah.
During those moments, like, what keeps you optimistic that eventually we will solve this somehow over time?
I mean, what else is there if not hope?
Right.
It's either that or it's like, okay, we're doomed. I guess I'm gonna jump off. Yeah, I mean that's like one aspect to it. It's like, I mean, that's literally the only way I know. It's like, you know, you have to progress. And honestly, if you look at it, even in the urban spaces, right? At least in the urban spaces, things are much better than they were 10 years ago.
Right. Right.
If you go back 10 years, we're all homophobes. We're all like, ew, that's so gay.
Yeah.
And now we're obviously progressed to a point where we're educating people who are younger than us to obviously be a much more evolved society.
Yeah.
And so hopefully that'll carry on, and then mm-hmm. that'll obviously make the everything much better. So that is one reason why it doesn't really, you know, why I do what I do.
Yeah.
Secondly, I feel like I'm privileged because I'm a man.
Yeah.
Right. I have all the privileges and I have secondhand anger.
Yeah.
I don't really go through anything that it, like, I obviously feel angry and I feel disappointed and I feel hurt and all of that when I see women go through the things they do, but I'm not going through any of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really still an outsider's perspective on the matter. It's just, I listen to people, I talk to people and I try and empathize with them. And then I write about what I write about. But
yeah.
It's still, at the end of the day, I feel like the women, especially in India, need to be heard more.
Mm-hmm.
I feel there need to be more women voices.
Yeah.
It's like when people come out and say things like, tell me 10 women inventors.
Right.
And I'm like, if they're not educated beyond the third grade, how the fuck they're going to invent things?
Right, right.
Right? Yeah. Every man, that's like if out of 10 men, 9 educated.
Yeah.
But one of them might be an inventor.
Yeah.
But if every 10 women, 2 are educated.
Right.
I mean, the odds are not in their favor, is it?
Exactly. Yeah. The thing that I end with in all of these that we've done so far, and yours is going to be episode 18. So
okay.
Yeah. Is that, you know, so you're 24, so there's not the audience that we have is 13 to 25.
Okay.
So a lot of times I want to make sure that by bringing in different voices and talking to different people who do different kinds of storytelling.
Yeah,
I want to give people, the listeners, the opportunity to hear from another perspective of, this is the kind of writer I am, this is the kind of storyteller I am.
Yeah.
And for the question I like to end with is, if there was a 15, 16-year-old version of you who was listening to this, what kind of message or something, some sort of inspiration would you like to, you know, give them for pursuing their creative journey as it is? Discovering it, pursuing it, in your experience, is there some particular message that you'd like to share?
The one thing you should not do is let other people dictate what you want to do with your art. Because I feel like I'm guilty of this even today, and I'm working on it. Is sometimes I feel like I write, when I'm creating art, when I'm writing, when I'm doing anything else, I feel like I do it to please people.
Yeah.
Right? Because I give into what people say.
Sure. Yeah.
Except the one thing you need to keep in mind is your art is going to be criticized no matter what.
Right, right.
It could be the best piece in the world, but there will be some people who won't like it. So you just have to suck it up and live with it.
Yeah.
Right. And if you think that it is the best thing out there, then just pursue it. Just keep at it, and you will make mistakes.
Yeah.
Like, God knows, I have made pet PVs for
I've
said that in a meeting, in an editorial meeting, out loud. Yeah. So that's just one aspect. I've written stuff that has gotten backlash for good and bad reasons.
Yeah.
And so just don't let it bog you down. Don't get bogged down by that.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I was in a dark place when I was 15, 16 because I had, I think it was about the time when I was about to fail. I was in that 2-year phase, but I was just not sure what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So honestly, you might not have the answers yet, 15 or 16. Don't worry about things that, if I don't do this, my life is going to go to shit if I don't do that. Because there's always a way out.
Yeah.
And you'll figure it out. You know, the older you get, the wiser you get, the more experiences you have.
Mm-hmm.
And don't shy away from having experience. I feel like the one thing that I didn't do as a teenager was go out more and meet more people and encourage myself to speak, to have experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like if you go out, and I think an art comes from that, right?
Yeah.
The more experiences you have with people, things, I don't mean substances, I don't mean that.
Sure, yeah.
I mean like actual real life experiences. So if you have an opportunity to travel, meet people, interact with them, and that's where it's going to come from. So I didn't do that as a teenager. So if I could go back in time, I would tell myself to do that more of that. Because I do that now and I'm making up for lost time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what you got to do. You got to have more experiences, travel more, speak to more people, have more conversation with diverse people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, keep going at it.
Yeah.
You will mess up. It's inevitable. You will make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be a big mistake, it could be a small mistake. Don't really let it pull you down.
Yeah.
Just keep going for it. And, you know, if there will be times where you feel like you're swimming against the tide.
Mm-hmm.
And the tide recedes and you're fine. So, you know, you will eventually be okay. That's what I'm saying.
Awesome.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to episode 18 of Story Talking. Do check out our last episode if you haven't already with Abhishek Shankar. And make sure you tune in next week where my guest will be Anupam Arunachalam, a comic book writer and illustrator. Thank you.